We're going to talk about a few Rashis, because tomorrow I have a simcha to be at. My nephew's putting on tefillin at the kotel. Big simcha for me and my family. So we'll talk a little bit about the end of the parsha, where Aaron and Miriam slander Moshe Rabbeinu. And it's a very, very sad scene, because when leadership's intact, whatever fissures exist in that community can be handled. But when the leadership starts to fissure, and the leadership starts to squabble, then it's harder to maintain the integrity of any community. So think about that over the next couple of years when you get married and you start to build a family, because a family is also a community. And whatever tensions always exist within any relationships, but if they surface too frequently and too visibly, it can really tear apart a family. And it's important to be able to create harmony and certainly not be vocal about whatever differences exist. And certainly in a community also, I think about this yeshiva. You say what you want, its strengths and its weaknesses, but there's very strong leadership, very harmonious leadership. There's no, you know, hearing, oh, I don't agree with this rabbi. By and large, because we agree. Even areas we don't agree, it's not something that tears apart our unified voice of leadership. So it makes the yeshiva, I think, very, very healthy and very successful. Bezot Hashem. But there's some interesting Rashis about the response to this slander. It's a very, very sad moment, and to a degree it prompts, and it serves as a prelude to Shlach and Korach. One of them is about humility, because Moshe, of course, is the most humble person to walk the face of the planet. Rish Moshe Anav Me'od, Yikal Adam. And the word Me'od, the Rambam reminds us, tells us that unlike other traits, which should be balanced and calibrated, and every trait is dangerous in excess, humility is not dangerous in excess. And the Rambam encourages us to be as humble as possible, based on this pasuk, Rish Moshe Anav Me'od. He wasn't just humble, he was very humble. Now, Hashem didn't tell this to Aaron and Miriam. This pasuk, Vish Moshe Anav Me'od, is before Hashem speaks to Aaron and Miriam and chides them and rebukes them. This is the Torah speaking to us. So why is this pasuk inserted? It's not defending Moshe to Aaron and Miriam. Why did you speak about him? He's such a humble and kind and moral person. That will come later. Hashem, actually, the defense Hashem takes to Aaron and Miriam is that Moshe had to separate from his wife because I'm constantly talking to him and I'm constantly appearing to him. So it's more of a legal defense, as we would say. So why does the Torah write in Parshas Baloscha, Vish Moshe Anav Me'od? The answer is because we're going to see Rashi will elaborate two manifestations of humility which allow this potentially debilitating crisis to pass with less of an issue and less of a scandal. What does it mean to be humble? Well, humble is a state of mind. It's an attitude. But it also has to have certain expressions. Expressions are on display in Rashi Rabbeinu. Rashi has two words, shafal or shafel, v'savlan. Two words, Vish Moshe Anav Me'od, Shafel, V'Savlan. The word Shafel means low, literally. Savlan means tolerant. Okay? We'll talk about the relationship between being low in spirit and being tolerant. But ultimately, the Torah is telling us that's why this situation didn't explode. Because Moshe's humility wasn't just mental or attitudinal. His humility allowed him to be both low and tolerant. And therefore, he brushed it aside. He didn't make a big deal about it. He didn't retaliate. He didn't get angry. He didn't punish. He didn't scream. He didn't. One of the most amazing traits we saw on display with Rav Lichtenstein is he would routinely be receiving critique, disparaging statements. People would say negative things about him. Not so much in the end of his life, but people who disagreed with his derech, people who disagreed with Hesder, people who couldn't wrap their heads around the Rebbe and a doctor. These are things that may not make sense to you because you grew up in a world which really lauded him. But I remember in the 80s, people, when he took positions politically that people disagreed with, people would say very negative things about him. I never once heard Rav Aaron retaliate or see anything in response. He didn't have a Twitter feed in which he got on, and no one had Twitter feeds. But he was very quiet, and he allowed things to pass because he was such a humble person. And that's what the Torah is telling us, that this could have really been a flare-up. Moshe's humility, and more important than his humility, but the expressions of its humility, allowed him to be more tolerant. So what was the expression of the humility? That Moshe was not just humble, but he was shafel. He was low in spirit. Who's the ultimate shafel ruach? Avraham Avinu. How does the shafelos haruach express itself? When he says, Anochi afar va'efer. What does it mean to be a shafel ruach? Shafel ruach means you understand the mortality and the frailty of the human condition. People that are successful in life sometimes get very giddy with their success, get very self-infatuated, very confident. That tends to lend to being supercilious and condescending to others. You realize it's your dust. It's your rima v'taleya, that your body is frail and weak, and it can disintegrate, and it will disintegrate at some point. And therefore, it allows you to be more tolerant on two fronts. A, because you don't feel slighted. You don't see yourself in such a high station. You don't see yourself based on the way your success is, delude you into seeing yourself as something superhuman and something exquisite. And
you have that healthy balance between optimism and cheer in life and a sense of gratification when you succeed. But you know how quickly it could be taken from you, and how quickly life can be taken, and how fortunate you should feel for whatever successes Hashem allows you. You don't let yourself get ahead of yourself and get a bloated head and get an image that's inaccurate. And therefore, the source of scandal and strife is when someone assails another person, infringes upon them, takes something of theirs, hurts their feelings, and he says, all of a sudden, anger leads to pride, and pride leads to resentment. It's the pride that really sustains machlokas. Anger fades. After a few minutes, you're
no longer angry. But it's the pride that really perpetuates a disagreement and dispute, because the victim sees him or herself in a certain way, and that self-image has been slighted or offended, and you just can't get past that offense. Some people live their whole lives in a perpetual state of offendedness, always being offended. And they can't take being offended, and it leads to anger, and it leads to dissatisfaction, and it leads to contentiousness. Once that entire edge is taken off, and you don't see yourself in that light, you're able to be much more tolerant, because you're just remove a talay. You just, as much as you have accomplished, you don't deserve everything your ego convinces yourself that you do deserve. And it's all going to be taken from you anyway. What happens on this earth, it's transient. So someone slighted you, so someone hurt your feelings, so someone, I know it's very hard to get past. Pride is a very powerful human trait. But it allows a person to be a little bit more tolerant. The second aspect that allows a person to be a little more tolerant when you feel shvel ruach is you're also able to tap into other people's frailty. Part of anger is that you judge people. You say, why is that person hurting my feelings? Why is that person acting inappropriately? And you render a judgment, and that judgment tends to be critical of the person. And because you're critical, you feel I have a right to be angry because they're taking actions I disagree with. But if you understand the frailty of the human condition, you understand that everyone is a mixed bag and everyone has flaws, even yourself. And it's not just that you feel less slighted because you're aware of your own limitations, but you realize a lot of boys your age go on this perfectionist streak where you're unable to accept hypocrisy in this world and flaws, and you want absolute accuracy and absolute authenticity and actual genuine. Of course, you don't demand it of yourself. You demand it of others. When other people can't be as perfect and immaculate as you expect them to be, you get harshly critical of them. And you tend to reject them and to be less interested. And if you realize that life is about truth and lies, we all tell lies to ourselves, and about heroism and failure, and we all have our moments of failure, and about good traits and bad traits, and we all have our negative traits, so you'd be less judgmental of other people. And when you're less judgmental of other people, you're able to put into perspective, say, that person has a very bad trait, but so do I. And that person's trait is expressing itself in very negative ways to me, but so do I. And you're able to counter the harshness and the severity, the austerity that you hold people to by recognizing the frailty and the delicacy of your own condition. And therefore, you're able to put things into perspective and not be so hierarchically evaluative of other people. And that's what happened in Moshe Rabbeinu's case. Because he was Shval Ruach, because like Avraham Avinu, he saw himself not just as humble, but the humility trend was a product of recognizing himself as a human being. As much as he scaled the heavens, as much as he was able to go 40 days and 40 nights without eating, there was a sense of mortality and a sense of, and that's why he was such a big Baal Chesed, because he understood that human beings have needs. And that's why Moshe's introduction is taking care of sheep and taking care of his father-in-law, taking care of women, and taking care of, there's a Chesed that serves as the preface to Moshe Rabbeinu's life. And that allows him to be Shval Ruach, like Avraham Avinu, and that Shval Ruach allowed him to be a Savlon, someone to be tolerant, and that tolerance allowed the situation to pass without it becoming Miriam Gate or Aaron Gate. Every time today there's a scandal, you put the word gate on the end of the scandal. So it could be Miriam Gate and Behaloscha Gate. It doesn't become Behaloscha Gate. No one's tweeting about it. No one's suing anyone else. It goes relatively quietly with the hope that at least they can recover. Of course, they are unable to recover. Moshe Rabbeinu's Shval Ruach is not on display in the text of the Torah, but Chazal fill it in. Chazal say that there are three types of pus-infected people. Shmuka, Shchin, all types of venereal diseases, Mishnah, Avos, Rav Nasan, and there are three different types of really disgusting, repulsive sicknesses. Lach,
wet infections in pus. Yavesh, if it's really dry and scaly, Ubal polyphus, I guess some sort of polyps growth or something. These are the three types of people that when they have these types of illnesses, it's very, very uncouth and uncomfortable and not in any way physically pleasing. It's very, very offsetting. Moshe Rabbeinu had all three of them. It doesn't mean Moshe Rabbeinu had all three of them. What the Medrash means to say is he saw himself in the same light. He saw himself in such a low fashion, and he wasn't infatuated with his physical vigor and his physical vibrancy, that he saw himself in those terms. It's just so healthy when you see people, when you go to a hospital, and you visit people in the hospital who are ill, visit people in the hospital in oxygen tanks, who are connected tubes, who can't go to the bathroom by themselves. Or even here, when we have some special needs boys sometimes who have real physical needs, most of the time not. It reminds you that your body isn't as functional as you think, and it can betray you, and it's not as you're not as vigorous as you think you are, and that's part of expressing your humility and ultimately becoming a little more tolerant. There's a beautiful story. I wanted to talk about a few more Rashi's, but I guess next year, Bezrat Hashem. There's a beautiful story about Hillel, who was very similar to Avraham Avinu, that he allowed his humility to translate into tolerance, because we know Hillel was a very humble person. Had his Hillel's humility on display. So again, you'd think he conducted himself in a certain way. He walked low. He didn't dress flashy. Some of the things we typically associate with humility. The Mishnah says no. It was the Erev Shabbos, and a person made a bet with his friend that he could anger Hillel. They could make Hillel become intolerant. So his friend took the bet because Hillel was known as such a tolerant person. And he came a few minutes before Shabbos. Hillel was in the bathroom. He knocked on the door. He said, Hillel, I have an important question for you. So Hillel put on his bathrobe. What's the question? Why do Babylonians have webbed feet? Today he'd be fired. It's a racist statement. But evidently Babylonia had webbed feet, so Hillel gave him an answer. Then he said, knocked on the door, another question. Why do Asians have slanty eyes? He gave him some answer. That's all these seemingly irrelevant trivia questions of Hillel. Every 2 minutes, Seh Shabbos was approaching, and Hillel was just very tolerant. He didn't scream at him. He didn't shout at him. He wasn't angered or infuriated by this invasion of his privacy. And the Medrash says that this stems from Hillel's humility. So you see that humility is meant to create tolerance. And the reverse is also true. If you're not yet humble, but you work on your tolerance, you'll see that tolerance can trigger humility. All these traits in life are palindromic. They're palindromes. If trait A generates B, then oftentimes trait B can also generate A. So if we expect tolerance to be the product of humility, it can also be the catalyst of humility. So if you feel like you're not yet humble, if you practice on being tolerant, you'll say, well, why am I tolerant? Because that person's flaws have to be put into perspective. Well, I also have flaws, and why am I tolerant? And, oh, you know, I'm not as great as I think I am. And sometimes if you're looking for humility, the way to find it is by tolerance. If you want to make sure your humility is authentic and accurate, make sure you're tolerant, and that tolerance shouldn't just come from some moral pluralism. Let's tolerate everyone. But the tolerance comes from an understanding of the human condition. That's probably the best way to say it. A lot of people become so high and accomplished in life, they forget the human condition. They see themselves and they see other human beings, and they're unable to associate that with our basic frailty and our basic limitation as humans. And to understand that, it's to be gracious. Graciousness means you understand that humans are humans, and you have your failures and they have their failures, and you're gracious about it. One of the things I think we've lost in the modern cacophony of political shouting and screaming is people aren't really gracious. They're very unaccepting and intolerant of people's limitations. Handicapped people, limited people, morally flawed people. People are limited, and you create this fictitious reality where you think you're perfect and expect other people to be perfect, and you're just operating at a level that's very, very inauthentic and inaccurate as opposed to understanding the people. You try your hardest, but you're accepting of other people even when they disappoint you, and you accept yourself, and you don't. There's two words in Rashi, a lot about two words in Rashi. Hopefully we'll have another time to discuss some of the other Rashis I plan to speak about. Anav, Rashi says, Shafel v'savlon. Shafel v'savlon. Two words in Rashi. And this is not said to Aaron and Miriam to defend Moshe. That's what I wanted to speak about. This is sent by the Torah to describe why the situation passed rather seamlessly. Okay? Have a good Shabbat.